Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Yamas and Niyamas, Non-Injury and Brahmacharya, and finally Nartana, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhinatha Velayatha Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Giving some thought to the Nartana Ritau today and looking at some of the statements Gurudeva made about it in Sarvadharma Shastras, I thought I'd share those. So we're about 2 weeks into the Nartana Ritau. 3.5 months left. Nartana Ritau, the season of dancing with Shiva, begins on Hindu New Year. This is the period of creation. That's important. Creation. The warm season from mid-April through mid-August. Teaching is dancing with Shiva. Key word of this season is planning. Skipping the colors. The emphasis is on seeing ahead, planning for future years. It is a time of planning retreats and other activities for youths and adults for the entire year. During this time of looking forward, the church's 6-year plan is updated by the stewards, and another year added. So we're supposed to update our plan here. Has everyone planned ahead 6 years? How's your 6-year plan? It's a good amount of time to be planned ahead. So the reason I read that was to catalyze us to, on those two thoughts, that it's a creative time of year, and it's a good time for planning, so it must be in the astrology of these sun signs, intellectual sun signs we're going through, starting with Aries. It's a good time to plan and be creative. So one of the reasons we can run out of inspiration in our life is we don't plan far enough ahead. We ran out of plans. We did everything we figured out we wanted to do, and we haven't created anything new to do. We've run out of plans, but we don't realize we've run out of plans necessarily. We're just going along, doing our day-to-day routines, coming to the San Juan Homa, doing our daily puja. Everything's great, but we don't have any plan. So it's a good time to pull out our plans, wherever they are, in our computer, in our drawers, in our diaries, and to look them over and to update them, and as Gurudeva says, to extend them another year. We always want to be planned ahead. If 6 years is too much, at least go 3. Sometimes our life is, we don't think it's stable enough or determined enough to go 6 years out. What will I be doing 6 years from now? No idea, but it's easy to go 3. And it's a worthwhile practice. It gives our life updated direction, shall we say. Gives us a chance to look at the goals we created last time, goals for retirement, goals for career advancement, goals for our children's schooling, and see if they're on track or see if they need to be changed. So Gurudeva was a great planner and encouraged everyone to plan ahead, and felt it was important not only to plan but to update the plan. So we can do that. Stewards can do that. Their level, the Kulams can look at their plans. How is our 6-year plan in the Piliar Kulam? Do we need to update it? How's our 6-year plan in the Lumbadar Kulam? And give that some thought. Good morning, everyone. Happy to have Narayana and Sheila with us this morning. Swagatam. Welcome. This morning, focusing on the yamas and a little bit on the niyamas. Before thinking through what I was going to say, I thought I'd start out, well, the first yama. You know, start there with ahimsa, reviewing that. Then as I looked at all the beautiful material Gurudeva had written on the yamas and niyamas, I realized that that wasn't really the beginning, that we needed to step back and take a look at the concept of the yamas themselves before we jumped into the first one. So this is kind of an overview on the yamas. So, of course, in our teachings, we emphasize that man is a divine being, that man is a soul, a spiritual being, and that the essence of that soul is God Shiva. So at the essence of our spiritual being, not only are we spiritual, but we're also one with God at the depth of our spiritual being. So of course that's our core teaching, and Gurudeva says that so beautifully in the phrase, man is not man. Who is man then? Man is God. So man is not man, man is God. So that's the beautiful spiritual teachings. However, it's important also to be grounded in other realities. So we are a soul, but where is our soul? It's inside of a physical body, right? It's in there. But it's not standing alone. It's not sitting up there in the Shiva Loka in the third world, blessing us all. It's encased as a physical body around it. So, being in a physical body, we not only have a soul, we also have an instinctive and an intellectual mind, which we need to work with. So, the phrase that Gurudeva uses is the three phases of the mind, which reminds us that there's threefold nature here we're dealing with, the instinctive, the intellectual, and the superconscious, or the soul. So we have three phases of the mind. So when we talk about the yamas, they're related to the instinctive area of the mind, part of us that acts like animals. And in that sense, the meaning of yama, or which is restraint, to restrain, is very helpful. So these are tendencies. The yamas focus on tendencies, such as the tendency to harm someone, tendency to lie, tendency to steal, that are part of the instinctive nature and which need to be controlled. So when you think about controlling the instinctive mind in Hindu imagery, the classic image is the charioteer. In fact, we just looked at one of those paintings the other day where there's five horses out there and the chariot and the charioteer, and he has all these reins and he's reining in the horses. It's a nice picture we just looked at. And so that is the idea of controlling something. We need to harness it. We need to rein it in. We don't want to let it run wild. We have to harness it. So that's represented by the reins. We have the energy of the horses, but if you let it run wild, the chariot will go too fast and turn over, right? Uncontrolled, so we have to harness it, control it, direct it. So in thinking about that, I remembered something that I had forgotten, which is the usual way. cognizant ability, you remember what you remembered and you forget what you've forgotten. But in normal speech, you remember something you forgot, right? So in this case, I remembered that Gurudeva in the past had certain of his shishya learn horseback riding. Okay, well, that doesn't sound too unusual. But he did it in the spirit of their learning to understand and control the instinctive mind. That's what he said. By doing this, you'll gain a better understanding of how the instinctive mind works and how to control it, just by learning how to control a horse through the reins. So that's an even more contemporary example. You know, the charioteer sounds a bit in the past since we drive automobiles. But we still ride horses one at a time. And so we can see, just in thinking about that, how that would work. You know, you gain a sense of the animal. First, you're a little afraid of it, you know, this and that. And then you gain a sense of how to work with it and how to control it through the reins. So that's very similar to the concept of working with our own instinctive forces. At first, when we blow up in anger, we say, whoa, how did I do that? A little bit afraid of our own tendency to get angry. But after a while, just like the horse, we learn how to rein it in so that we have controls on it. We can control that force so it doesn't run away with us. Another image which is helpful is thinking about a spiritual foundation. These days, it may have always been that way, but certainly these days, lots of individuals are interested in the spiritual path, want to make progress, and what approach do they want to take? Let's forget the basics. Let's just jump into the advanced practices. You know, who needs basics? Those are for someone less evolved than I am. I'll just start with the end of the path and forget about the beginning, right? Just give me a high-powered pranayama. That's all I need, a real good pranayama, and I'll sit in meditation and really go within, right? So, of course, this approach doesn't work too well because they don't have a foundation, a spiritual foundation. It's like trying to do anything without learning the basics first, or we really can't sustain it. So Gurudeva has a nice quote on that. It is true that bliss comes from meditation, and it is true that higher consciousness is the heritage of all mankind. However, the 10 restraints and their corresponding practices, practices means the niyamas, are necessary to maintain bliss consciousness. So Gurudeva is saying that idea that though without them you can do something, get your pranayama going and get into bliss, you won't sustain it because you don't have the instinctive mind and the intellectual mind under control. So they're going to pop up and cause you to lose your state of bliss consciousness. They'll override it. You'll become angry or something, and there goes bliss. And you can't be angry and blissful at the same time. You haven't seen someone angry and blissful at the same time, have you? No. If you become angry, you lose your bliss, definitely. So in thinking about a spiritual foundation, I was drawing the analogy to building a tall skyscraper. How many of you have ever seen a very tall building being built? Like in San Francisco in the old days, some of us saw the pyramid, the Transamerica Pyramid being built, or some really tall building, and you notice how far down below the surface of the earth they dig. Really far down. Now, the taller the building is, the further down they have to dig. Why? So it doesn't fall over, right? Okay. So we can learn something from this. Gurudeva says, the fact is, the higher we go, the lower we can fall. The top chakras spin fast. The lowest one available to us spins even faster. The platform of character must be built within our lifestyle to maintain the total commitment, the total contentment needed to persevere on the path. So in thinking about this foundation for the building, the idea is first you put in a lot of concrete, right? So much concrete, it's amazing how much they pour down there. So that's like the yamas. The first part of what holds up our consciousness is the foundation of the yamas. And in the concrete, they put steel, right? So the steel is like the niyamas. It comes out of the concrete and goes up. So it's because of digging deep, meaning the foundation is a solid one. We're really good at the yamas and niyamas. That's what digging deep means. We've mastered them. Because the foundation is deep and consists of cement and steel, the building is stable. It goes up and it doesn't fall over. So that's the idea, that when our mastery of the yamas and niyamas is good, our consciousness goes up, doesn't come back down. We don't fall down. Why? Because we have the foundation there. The foundation is there in the first place. Gurudeva is even more specific in another quote. He says, these restraints and practices build character. Character is the foundation for spiritual unfoldment. So all of what I said so far about foundation can be summarized in the word character, or character building. So when Gurudeva came back from the European inner search, that was one of his themes. I don't know what stimulated it, not being on the inner search myself, but he was going around talking a lot about character building and philosophical understanding. Remember, he said, what we need to stress at this time among new students and new church members are those two areas, character building and philosophical understanding. And based upon that, the devotional practices will make more sense and bear more fruit, let alone the meditative practices. So, build character. In terms of Hinduism scriptures, one of the most famous statements and one of the oldest that's quoted often is Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which gets translated as the whole world is my family, or the whole world is one family. So we were talking about my people recently, and so we could also translate this as the whole world is my people. Nobody's getting left out in this concept. As Albert Einstein said, we're embracing all living creatures in our vision. So quite often that doesn't happen. And in the current problem in India, you see two different dominant perspectives, and they both come into us. We see them both come out on HPI and so forth. One perspective is that Hindu leaders say, my people, and they mean the Hindus. Muslims aren't my people. That's someone else. Other leaders, when they say my people, mean everybody in India. Hindus, Muslims, Christians, everybody. That's my people. Everyone who's an Indian citizen is my people, say certain Hindu leaders in India. The same idea shows up in American television. Have you seen the ad which has all these different people from different ethnic backgrounds saying, I'm an American? Seen that on television? Campaign, I am an American. So that's the same idea, wanting to make sure that we don't leave anybody out. We think some people in America are my people and other people in America aren't my people. No, I am an American. We're all Americans, is what this ad is telling us. Don't leave anybody out just because of their ethnic background. If they're an American citizen, they're an American. So, we have a visualization exercise. Normally we don't do visualization exercises, but I thought we'd take a few minutes and do a visualization exercise on my people. So what we'll do after I explain it is we'll close our eyes for a few minutes, and when I want to end it, I'll just om, and we can open our eyes. So we start with ourselves, right? When we talk about people, that's where we always start. Okay, then we start to add other people in my people. So we start with our immediate family. If we're monks, we start with our family of monks. And then we add other people. We add other relatives, other friends. We add the people in the neighborhood. We add the people on the island. We add the people in the state. We add the people in the United States. We add the people in other countries that we feel close to. And then we can ask ourselves, who have we left out? Who aren't my people? Then we can try and add them. Oh, I left out part of Africa. I left out the Middle East. Left out this part. Just think and try and add the whole world into your concept of my people, piece by piece. Okay, here we go. So it's an interesting exercise to see who we tend to leave out of our people, who we added last. But Vasudeva Kutumbakam, everybody should be part of my people. That's what Hindu scripture tells us. Gurudeva ends the section on the first yama, nonviolence, with a section to the Madhavasi, which is interesting. Gives a whole page of advice directed toward Madhavasis practicing nonviolence. It's more a warning than anything else. He says, you need to be careful. He says, because you're practicing brahmacharya, this gives added power to your thoughts, then your the added power in your thoughts gives added power to your words. So therefore, if you scold someone, if you speak strongly to someone, you have to be very careful because your words are probably more powerful than you realize. So therefore, he cautions Madhavasi to be careful, to be gentle in their words, to avoid hurting someone. It's like driving a fantastically powerful car that when you're used to driving a car that has very little power, when you step in the car that has all the power, before you know it, you're going too fast and you might hit someone and etc. You know, there's more power than you're used to. So you need to realize that that extra power is there and temper your words so you're careful not to hurt someone. Speaking of words, as we talked about, I think about 2 months ago, we talked about words and ahimsa, and that, of course, most of the people we all know don't go around hitting people with their fists. There are people that hit people with their fists, and maybe young children do, but the adults we associate with, they normally don't go around hitting people with their fists. So we tend to think, okay, everyone's following ahimsa. Nobody's hitting each other. But of course, it's nonviolence in deed, word, and thought. So the deeds for adults are usually no problem, but it's the words. We tend to hurt each other with our words. And as we talked about, there's four common ways this is done: joking, teasing, gossiping, and backbiting are the four common forms of hurting people with words. And Gurudeva gives us a fourfold test to make it easy to know what to say and what not to say. Remember it? Speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary. So if we think before we speak, and our thinking includes running it by that test, then that's a good way of harnessing the tendency to hurt people with words. Gossip. You know, why is gossip on the list? The person you're talking about isn't even there, right? It's not like you're telling someone to their face you don't like them or this and that or they're flawed or so forth. You're telling it when they're not there. So how can that hurt them? Right? Must be harmless. So Gurudeva describes that in an interesting way, and of course that gets into the most subtle form of injury, which is with a thought. Even our thoughts can injure people if they're unkind. So Gurudeva says, when you defile others mentally and verbally through backbiting gossip about the happenings in their lives, you are hurting them. You are actually making it difficult for them to even persist where they are. They sense, they feel the ugliness that you are projecting toward them. So people are sensitive. So if we have those kinds of thoughts and we share them in form of gossip, negative thoughts about people, it's hurting them. It's just like hitting them with a physical object, except it's, you know, it's a refined object. But it hits them and can discourage them and drain the shakti from them and so forth. So it's very important, even our thoughts or what we speak when someone isn't present needs to be controlled. So there's a lot in that area, but we went over it very thoroughly a couple of months ago, so I don't want to go over it all again.